You know, when you get up in the morning and you're struggling to find the coffee pot, sometimes it helps to have a friendly voice, keeping you calm and informed. Well, that's what we do here. I'm Jay Barrett. You might remember me from 20 years ago when I worked here before. Well, I'm back, and I'm happy to be your guide from 6 to 9 a.m. Monday through Friday here on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL, 91.9 FM, Kenai Saldatna.
Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell. Now let's move on to this month's feature, where I want to talk a little bit about alcohol education. America doesn't have a very healthy relationship with alcohol. Sure, many of us have a pretty healthy relationship with adult beverages, but as a culture, we don't really handle it very well. Why is this? Some folks believe it's religious in origin, a holdover from our Puritan ancestors. You remember the Puritans, right? They were gripped by the morbid fear that someone, somewhere, might actually be enjoying themselves. Some of the religious denominations still popular today in the U.S. view alcohol with the same sort of loathing that it earns in the most fundamentalist of Islamic societies. After all, less than a century ago, we as a people enacted prohibition, thinking somehow that doing so would help solve our social ills. We all know how well that worked out. I've been lucky enough to travel around the world at various times in my life and even live abroad for a few years, and I can tell you that most other Western cultures don't have nearly the problems with alcohol that we do. I've given the matter some thought, and this is what I've come up with. Drinking is something you have to learn how to do properly and safely. I don't know if this seems obvious to you or ridiculous, but hear me out. Alcohol affects everyone differently. It takes time and experience to learn just how it impacts you, what your limits are, what the warning signs are that you've had too much. I know that when I was a young adult, I had to inadvertently overindulge on a couple of occasions to learn my limits. Fortunately for me, I was able to do so in a controlled environment where I was insulated from any of the potentially serious ramifications of being overly intoxicated. Imagine if we treated driving a car the way we treat consuming alcohol. No one would be allowed to even touch the wheel of a car until they reached a certain age, say 18. Then on their 18th birthday, without any preparation or testing, we hand them a driver's license and the keys to a Ferrari with the admonition to drive responsibly. Of course, this sounds insane, but it's effectively exactly what we do to our young adults with alcohol. Let's look at how other cultures around the world do things differently. Minimum legal drinking ages around the world vary dramatically. Most such laws apply only to drinking alcohol beverages in public locations. The only country with a minimum legal age for consuming alcohol at home is the United Kingdom, which prohibits drinking below the age of 6. The average minimum legal drinking age around the globe is 15.9 years. The majority of countries have set the drinking age at 18. In 50 countries, the minimum age is lower than 18. In only 12 countries, is it higher than 18, and the U.S. is one of only 7 countries that have a drinking age of 21, the highest in the world. The others are Indonesia, Kazakhstan, Oman, Palau, and Sri Lanka. Some states in the United States make exception to this rule. For example, here in Alaska, it's legal for persons under the age of 21 to consume alcohol on private, non-alcohol selling premises with parental consent. 29 other states also allow parents to provide their children with alcohol in the privacy of their own homes. But in the remaining 20, even parents are barred from providing their children with alcohol until the child's 21st birthday. Thus, those who strictly adhere to state laws are prevented from introducing young adults to alcohol in a controlled home environment. This typically relegates drinking underground, where there is no responsible guidance, and peer pressure to abuse alcohol. Parents should be allowed to provide their own children alcohol in the context of teaching responsible decisions about consumption. The enforcement of minimum legal drinking ages also varies widely between countries and often within countries. In many nations, the law isn't generally enforced unless alcohol is abused. Internationally, the average age at which drinking alcohol first occurs is 12 years old. About 80% of young people begin drinking alcohol beverages regularly at age 15 or younger. That's according to the World Health Organization. Drinking ages in the United States used to vary from state to state. As a young man growing up in New Orleans, the drinking age for me was 18. Then the federal government passed the National Minimum Drinking Age Act of 1984. It required all states to raise their minimum purchase and public possession of alcohol age to 21. States that did not comply faced a reduction in highway funds. The act does not actually prohibit persons under 21 from drinking, merely from purchasing or possessing alcohol in public. Threatened with a loss of highway dollars, all 50 states eventually complied with this federal mandate. The minimum drinking age of 21 in the U.S. appears to be not only ineffective, but actually counterproductive. Although it was passed with the best of intentions, it has had some of the worst outcomes, for the reasons I have already pointed out. As a state, Alaska has an even bigger problem with alcohol than most. I would suggest that it's time we tried something different. I believe that what we need is the equivalent of a learner's permit for consuming alcohol. Starting at the age of 18, adults should be allowed to consume limited amounts of alcohol under controlled conditions. Just like a learner's permit for driving, a learner's permit for drinking could require that alcohol consumption be done in the presence of a responsible older adult, that the consumption be limited to low alcohol content beverages such as beer and wine, that food must be consumed, or any other reasonable restriction that the state sees fit to impose. Remember, I'm suggesting this be issued to someone who is already legally an adult in just about every other way. They can vote, get married, have children, buy a gun, and so on. Why would it be so risky to let them consume a beer or a glass of wine? After all, they're probably doing so already. Now they're just doing so surreptitiously. Along these lines, the president emeritus of Midbury College created an organization, Choose Responsibility, to promote discussion and public debate on how best to reduce alcohol abuse. It has suggested a number of ideas. Choose Responsibility believes federal legislation should not penalize states that participate in a pilot alcohol education program based on a minimum drinking age of 18. The organization believes the following. A state should be able to present a plan for educating and licensing young adults ages 18 to 20. The federal government should grant the state a waiver in the 10% highway funds reduction penalty for a minimum of 5 years. States would create a mechanism to collect data to monitor the effects of the program. States would submit these statistics to Congress along with an analysis of the effects of the program. Individual state proposals would include the guidelines for eligibility and suspension of licenses proposed in the program. Choose Responsibility also proposes a new approach to alcohol education. It would be similar to driver's education. The program would be taught by certified alcohol educators. They would cover the legal, ethical, health, and safety issues of drinking. The program would consist of at least 40 hours of instruction. Most would be in the classroom. However, it would be supplemented by DWI court hearings, safe ride taxi programs, and community forums. The program would require a partnership between home and school. It would entail a final examination that students must pass for licensing, and it would provide accurate and unbiased alcohol education for both drinkers and abstainers. Upon successful completion of the course, each student would receive a license. It would entitle a recipient to all the privileges and responsibilities of adult alcohol purchase, possession, and consumption. There is much research evidence to suggest that these changes could reduce the extent of alcohol abuse in the United States. Some organizations with a vested interest in maintaining the status quo oppose even discussing any of these proposals. But reducing alcohol abuse is a very important matter in the public interest, both for the U.S. as a whole and for Alaska in particular. I, for one, think it's time we started discussing this. Next up, we'll have an interview with Sasan Mosanin of Denali Brewing Company. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, and I'm your host, Bill Howell.
It's pick-click-give time for Alaskans. When you file for the Alaska Permanent Fund dividend, you can support your favorite nonprofit organizations. Do you value public radio? Donations help KDLL provide the news, features, and entertainment programming you trust from around the world and right here at home. Apply for your dividend at pfd.alaska.gov by March 31st. And pick, click, give to help your favorite organizations. Thanks.
And welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 Kenai Soldotna. We're talking to Sasan from Denali Brewing Company. Hey, Sasan, how you doing?
I'm really good. Thanks for having me, Bill.
Thanks for taking the time to talk to us. So, hey, what's new and happening up there in Talkeetna?
Well, this has been an incredibly exciting start of the year for us. In addition to the work that we've been doing with the brewery and seeing our summer seasonal agave gold become a year-round produced beer in cans for us, we're working on replacing the agave gold, which was our summer seasonal, with a Grove IPA, really exciting IPA that we've been producing on draft now for a few years. So you can look out for that coming out to all parts of Alaska, hopefully sometime starting in the May-June time period. So that's been pretty exciting. We just re-released our Flagstock 2, which is a Flanders-style red ale. That's part of our 750-milliliter Belgian bottle series release. This is one that we haven't brewed for about 4 years and one of my kind of personal favorite beers. And also just wrapped up a collaboration with our friends over at Nobmil in Norway. We just did a stone beer collaboration brew where we helicoptered out into the Alaskan bush and made a kind of primitive style stone beer with the base being an imperial porter. So it's been just an incredibly exciting start to 2018 with a lot of really cool things going on the brewery front. As some of your listeners might know, Denali Brewing's also been producing spirits. Basically, January 2017, we started distilling. Yeah, it's been a great year.
If memory serves, you guys are the only people in the state that hold a triple license, right? Triple manufacturing license to do spirits, beer, and wine/mead/cider?
That's true, and I failed to mention a lot of the work that is going on the winery front. Celestial Mead, that was Mike Hyker's creation out of Anchorage. Mike and I have a Talkeetna connection here, and as Mike was gearing up to retire, we basically purchased and took over Celestial Mead and moved it to Talkeetna, and basically taken a couple of his recipes so far, his Raspberry and Belgique, and started producing both of those over here in Talkeetna at our Mile 2 facility. And also have two ciders that we released and are selling on draft. They're kind of part of the creative period that we're talking about. It's been probably one of the most exciting periods. We started in 2009, and within that period from 2009 to the present day, it's been a really fast evolution of incredible beers coming out. But in many ways, in the last 18 months, we've seen just a creative explosion going on here at our facility, and it's been really rewarding.
Okay. Let's talk about the cider. We had some of that on draft down here for the Frozen River Fest last weekend, and I heard a lot of positive comments about it. I certainly enjoyed when I sampled it. Is that something that's going to show up in bottles at some point? You say it's all on draft now, right?
Correct. Currently, right now, it's a draft-only product. We are doing some research to determine what type of packaging is the best, given the fact that, you know, the brewery has been packaging our beer in cans now since 2012, kind of lifestyles that most Alaskans live. The can format seems to be really one, the type of equipment that we have to begin with, and just from a lifestyle perspective, what works best for us. So initially, we're doing some research and development work in the cans. Yeah, so hopefully, maybe optimistically, we can maybe get some of the cider in the cans this upcoming fall, if everything goes well.
Okay. What do you guys have on offer spirits-wise now, and what do you see becoming available, like, say, this year?
We have a lot of really exciting things going on the distillery front. My personal passion and motivation for getting into distillation dates right back to when we started the brewery. It was something that always been motivated to see become part of what we were doing, and it's been 9 to 10 years in the making to see this happen. So We have basically two products right now that are being produced because the whiskey you can't just release right away. So we've got a vodka and gin that we basically had since June of 2017. And the vodka is not a lifeless, soulless vodka. Many vodka expect a very neutral, kind of flavorless spirit. We're a craft distillery, and we use craft, specifically brewery-related ingredients. And just by nature of the ingredients in our process, our vodka is really clean, but it's got a lot of flavor. It's kind of what makes it unique. And then our gin is also similar. What we've done is created a gin that we feel is really, really approachable and something that folks can mix into a whole variety of different cocktails. It's a citrus-forward gin, and one of the things that kind of makes it unique is through our collaborative spirit with the Norwegians over in Nordmøre. We basically been bringing Norwegian juniper berries over and using that in the gin, and what that's doing is creating a much, much more subtle and nuanced juniper aroma and flavor in the gin, as opposed to maybe a Italian or Southwest juniper berry that tends to be a little more astringent. So it's a very delicate gin. The passion's to make the whiskey, and you got to pay the bills. So the vodka and the gin are helping us lay down barrels. We've right now got 14, 15-gallon barrels, basically three different types of whiskey that we're producing. We have a single malt whiskey, and then we have a single malt smoked whiskey, and then we have a five malt whiskey, which is kind of based on the single engine red recipe that we have on the brewery side. And that's been really keeping us busy due to the kind of small size of our still. We just recently started a collaboration with Kalani Brothers, the coffee roasters down at Anchorage, and potentially working towards making a coffee liqueur that will hopefully release sometime this summer. And that's been a lot of fun working with them, honing in right now on maybe a whiskey-based coffee liqueur that we'll release with them. And then in terms of answering your question about what else is new, what we've been working on in the distillery is making craft ready-to-drink cocktails that could be served on draft, and know that it has all the high-end ingredients that you'd expect and the attention to consistency that you'd expect from the beer world, but you can get it on draft as opposed to having the bartender make it right there for you.
Well, hey, Sasan, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Any last things you'd like to say?
I'd love to throw a shout-out. We have an event coming up March 23rd and 24th called Beer Tripping. This is an annual homebrew gathering that we've had basically since the first year we started. We partnered up with the Great Northern Homebrew Club, and you know, starting on the 23rd and completing that weekend, we have all sorts of really fun stuff going on. There's a beer submission competition in which we take the homebrews, do a really informal and fun kind of judging to see which beer wins, and we then take that beer and produce it on our system here and release it at the next year's Beer Tripping as the Golden Carboy winner from the previous year. We just last year added Equinox mead judging competition to it. We have homebrew tasting shares and a whole host of other events. Really fun. So if you guys are out there and interested in coming up to Talkeetna on the 23rd and 4th of March, it is a lot of fun.
Sounds great. I got to make it up there 1 year for one of those. Still haven't done it yet, but always hope to. Thanks again for taking the time to talk to us, and you guys keep making the great stuff up there, okay?
All right. Thanks, Bill. Y'all take care.
All righty. This is Bill Howell on Drinking on the Last Frontier on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. Next up, we'll have Brewing Science.
Shaylin Cochran here, reporter and host at KDLL. You know, one of the things I like most about public radio is the time we get just to learn, explore, and talk. Join us Wednesday mornings at 10 a.m. to be a part of the Kenai Conversation, 60 minutes dedicated to learning, exploring, and talking right here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna, public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.
And welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. I'm your host, Bill Howell. In our last segment this month, we're going to talk more about the science of brewing And this month, we're going to be talking about hops. In past brewing science segments, we've discussed two of the major components of beer, malt and water. However, water and grain go into making many of the foods we consume. Now it's time to talk about the ingredient which is unique to brewing and which many characterize as the soul of beer, hops. Hops are the flowers, also called seed cones or strobiles, of the hop plant Humulus lupulus. The hop plant is a vigorous, climbing, herbaceous perennial, usually trained to grow up strings in a field called a hop field, a hop garden, or a hop yard when grown commercially. Many different varieties of hops are grown by farmers around the world, with different types being used for particular styles of beer. Hops were first mentioned by the Roman writer Pliny the Elder in the 1st century, but the first documented use of hops in beer is from the 9th century, though Hildegard of Bingen, 300 years later, is often cited as the earliest documented source. Before this period, brewers used gruet, composed of a wide variety of bitter herbs and flowers, including dandelion, burdock root, marigold, horehound, the old German name for horehound, Berghofen, means mountain hops, ground ivy, and heather. Early documents include mention of a hop garden in the will of Charlemagne's father, the Pepin the Short. In addition to adding flavor to beer, hops were also used in brewing for their antibacterial effects over less desirable microorganisms, and for many purported benefits, included balancing the sweetness of the malt with bitterness, contributing a variety of desirable flavors and aromas. Historically, traditional herb combinations for beers were believed to have been abandoned when beers made with hops were noticed to be less prone to spoilage. There are several important chemical compounds in hops that impart character to the finished beer. Alpha acids. Probably the most important chemical compound within hops are the alpha acids, or humulones. During wort boiling, the humulones are thermally isomerized into iso-alpha acids, or isohumulones, which are responsible for the bitter taste of beer. There are also beta acids. Hops contain beta acids, or lupulones, sensitive to oxidative decomposition, which may be detrimental to the taste of beer. For this reason, beta acids are considered a negative factor in brewing, and many brewers usually choose hops with low beta acid content. There's also essential oils. The main components of hops essential oils are terpene hydrocarbons consisting of myrcene, humulene, and caryophyllene. Myrcene is responsible for the pungent smell of fresh hops. Humulene and its oxidative reduction products may give beer its prominent hop aroma. Together, myrcene, humulene, and caryophyllene represent 80 to 90% of the total hop's essential oil. Finally, there are also flavonoids. Xanthohumol is the principal flavonoid in hops, and it's under basic research for its potential anti-cancer properties. In the brewing process, hops are typically added either at the beginning of the boil or toward the end. Hops are added early so that the heat of the boiling process can isomerize their alpha acids and determine the bitterness level of the beer, typically measured in international bittering units, or IBUs. A typical American lager like Budweiser might have 5 to 10 IBUs, while a double IPA would have 80 to 100. The late hop additions impart hop flavors and aromas to the finished beers. These elements come from the essential oils and flavonoids, which are volatile and will be lost if the hops are allowed to boil for too long. Finally, more hops may even be added to the cask or keg of the finished beer. This process is called dry hopping and imparts even more hop flavor and aroma. Hops are typically added as either whole flowers or pellets, though some newer products such as cryohops are also entering the marketplace. Whole hop flowers are simply the dried hop seed cones, while pellets are seed cones which have been ground up and then compressed. Both types have their advocates in the brewing world. The major hop growing regions of the world fall between 35 and 55 degrees of latitude in both the northern and southern hemispheres. Hops are produced in large quantities in Europe, the Pacific Northwest of the United States, Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa, though small amounts are beginning to be grown in other regions. Numerous hop varieties are grown in different regions. Some of the most famous are the so-called noble hops of Central Europe, Hallertauer, Tettinger, Spalt, and Saaz varieties. They are low in bitterness and high in aroma. English noble varieties are Fuggle, East Kent Goldings, and Goldings. American hop varieties tend to be more bitter than their European counterparts, with more intense aromas often reminiscent of pine, resin, or citrus. New experimental hop varieties are constantly being developed as well, thanks to the ever-growing demand of the worldwide craft brewing industry. When the word beer first came into use in English, it referred to beer made with hops, as opposed to ale, which was the older, unhopped malt beverage. Eventually, the hop became so dominant that the older, unhopped drinks were no longer brewed, and beer became the name for all malt-based beverages. So hops made beer, and they are busy remaking it today as part of the craft beer revolution. Well, that's it for this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. As we close things out, I'd like to leave you with this month's beer quote. This month's closing quote comes from Abraham Lincoln, the 16th President of the United States, who said, "I am a firm believer in the people. If given the truth, they can be depended upon to meet any national crisis. The great point is to bring them the real facts and beer." Have a good month. This is Bill Howell, Drinking on the Last Frontier on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna, and we'll see you on the radio.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
IPAs, ales, and stouts, pilsners, porters, too. Microbrew, homebrew, any craft you choose. Look before you leap, sip before you drink. What you get isn't always what you think.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst. Palate before you quench your thirst.